Hello.
It's the 13th of April, 4 weeks into lockdown. So I'm here, Kerry Dwen and John and Crooked Claw. We're going to talk about COVID-19 and some other things.
And the general conditions in which we're living and how we are responding to them.
So one of the things we wanted to bring up is how this feels like a grief moment. I've said this to a few people and they've agreed with me. They have the same feeling. It's like when you've lost someone. So the first 2 weeks are really intense, and then it starts to subside a little and you forget the situation that you're in, and you do something practical and suddenly it hits you like a tram, bam, and you remember that there's this hideous psyop operating on the planet, and it hits you like a train. I've cracked twice in the last 4 weeks. Unfortunately, I've got my friends around me to slap me around.
What do you mean by cracked?
The fear got hold of me, and I lost it. First, it was the realization I might never be able to travel back to England and see my family ever again, and then the next time was them coming after animals.
We heard a rumor that they might be considering that animals spread the virus.
Well, they found it in a tiger in a New York zoo, so that's the start of that, isn't it? So it's a minute-to-minute assessment, isn't it?
It really is. It's hour by hour through the day. And holding steady, for me, is the essential thing. Just holding steady and sober.
You've managed to do that, haven't you, John?
Yeah, in fact, in some aspects of it, I am enjoying myself.
You sick fucker.
It's an act of vengeance to enjoy yourself in such a situation, I would say.
And you said the other day about moral fortitude.
Did I?
Yeah.
I wonder what I meant by that.
Well, we're all like boiling frogs in a pressure cooker.
Yeah, I used the example of frogs in a pressure cooker rather than the well-known example of putting a frog in a pot of water at regular temperature and slowly raising it. Now they're actually pressure cooking the population. And it's really showing up. I heard firsthand reports. You always want to count on firsthand reports. They're going to be interesting wherever they come from. I had a firsthand report from Belgium that in that small country, which is pretty crazy anyway, they're having a lot of domestic fights break out. And in the city of Brussels, the rotten heart of Europe, they're having violence in the streets and quarrels.
People are cracking under the pressure, mm-hmm. And no surprise.
How can they not?
Exactly.
Can they not?
It's part of the plan, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're counting on that hugely, and they're counting on people turning against each other. That's always their cowardly method, isn't it? That, it's always hard to get to them so they can act with confidence that people will take it out on each other.
Well, this is the most evil and cruel example of divide and conquer.
Yeah, it's by far the cruelest event that's ever been perpetrated on this world by the enemies of life, Mephisto, the Zenosh. And feeling that cruelty is a pathos, is an emotional reality for me. I do feel that cruelty. I also feel the grief in, for instance, I'm very careful of how I think in my thinking language and my speaking language. So, for instance, I don't say, well, there's someone that I care about, happens to be my friend of oldest standing in the world, who lives in another country, and there's a possibility that I might not see her again. I don't say I won't see her again. And when that comes up in my emotional body, it's not so much about Rigpa pointing to thoughts, but more or less an emotional cue from my body, I feel grief already.
Mm. Yeah.
It's sad, the destruction of lives of people is tremendously sad.
Yeah, I mean, quickly, Clara and I were talking the other day about your mother died, 2 years ago in August? And we were, because I knew her, and we were both saying we were grateful that she wasn't around anymore to be in this.
Yeah, to be subjected to this.
Yeah.
As regards our circumstances, I'm sure our friends and allies out there would want to know there are circumstances in a remote place, relatively remote, in the mountains, are not that difficult or oppressive as such. There's an atmosphere, of course, but the circumstances living in an agricultural area, and life goes on, and the villages nearby operate. There's food in the stores. And
It's more quiet.
And the garages are open.
Mechanics
and so on.
Fortunately, the people around us that have contact with us as strangers are, for the most part, genial, even warm. I can see, for instance, that it's hitting some of them at the soft spot of their humanity more than it is others.
Yeah, indeed.
For instance, we have mail delivery here. We have a post office. We have a mailbox. Generally, though, you have to go out and sign for the mail. And the woman who comes in a car, I'm a little doubtful about her. She appears to be. What have you picked up from her?
She believes the hype. I'm sure they're instructed that they have to wear gloves and a mask. I'm still having to sign for mail, so.
But I mean her attitude.
Yeah.
Well, she's got gloves and mask on, so she's not.
Well, the Spanish royal decree states that all delivery persons, whether it be food, parcels, whatever, are required by law to wear gloves and a mask. Taxi drivers, anybody that comes into contact with the public is required to be wearing protective.
I just realized there's another convenience in that for the perpetrators is that if someone's smiling at you, what you can see by the expression of their face, you can't see it. So their emotion, even if they are showing emotion to you, which would be normal, you wouldn't see it. So it's really...
Well, I would say I've had quite a lot of contact, actually, with the outside world. And I would say that, I agree with you. You can't see that smile. However, you can see often emotion in people's eyes. And I would say from my experiences that their eyes are cold.
Yeah.
You know, that they're... If they're emotionally wearing that protection.
Wary and a certain amount of fear in their eyes. Mm-hmm. I see that too.
So let's talk about the dissidents. Because this whole psychological operation is because people are self-policing and self-isolating.
They have achieved it through compliance. Of course, there is an unstated threat behind the compliance. One of Mephisto's tricks is that, how did I put it? An implied threat can be more effective than an open threat. Mm. So the implied threat is, well, if you don't comply, X, Y, Z, and that implied threat is enough to get many people to comply, plus the fear of the implant of the phantom microbe monster.
Plus, non-tribal Zenosh. We heard from someone in California last night that, was it the mayor of LA has encouraged people to grass on their snitch. Fellow citizens? Snitch, mm-hmm. The word was used, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with reward.
Mayor of New York did the same and said they would be rewarded. That's right. I mean, that's quite a statement. That's real Soviet style. In the Soviet Union, it's a well-known anecdote that everybody snitched on everybody else. Mm. Some people even snitched on themselves. It was so crazy. They wouldn't even confess things that they didn't even do, just to let the pressure off them.
Mm.
They felt so guilty. So the Zen Arsh know that the nations, in various degrees, have conscience. Some of the nations, particularly the white races, have high conscience, high mutual trust, and we are therefore, if I may speak for the white races, as I sometimes do, subject to guilt. So there's nothing to be guilty about. I haven't committed any crimes, I haven't hurt anybody. But you can see that the guilt that people carry, there again, if they're Catholics, religious people, they already got the Jewish program that imprinted them with guilt. Well, they're counting on that every second of every day now.
So the video that you put up on the near, the woman in Richmond in London who got arrested for being sat on a park bench. So I've been following that video on YouTube and watching the amount of clicks she's got. At the moment, there's 303,908 clicks, 5,600 dislikes, 1,900 likes. Now, Kerry's a flat earther, and I think she's got mental health issues. But that was a great example of somebody defying the compliance. And the police handled her very gently. They actually gave her a lift home. There was no argy-bargy. There was no fracas. But I've been watching the comments. When you first put it up in the mirror, I spent the night looking at every single comment. There was about 3,000 comments, and then now it's up to 8,198 comments. 98% are negative towards her. I mean, really
that
negative
much.
Towards 98%.
Abusive.
People have even said that they've joined YouTube to tell her off. You behaving like that, you're going to make the lockdown even worse. People like us, I can't go and see this person. I've got 5 kids. Rah 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 rah. They really, really, and it absolutely shocked me. These people are going to be queuing up in self-administered handcuffs to have their vaccines.
Indeed.
For the coronavirus.
That is what the authorities want them to do. And some are highly likely to comply. I'm not going to say they will. They want to be really careful, because to say you will or it's going to happen is intentional language. And we need to reserve our intentional language for our intentions. Because our intentions, in that we hold her power and we are interactive with her, are extremely powerful. So I'm very careful not to deploy any of my intention in a negative language.
Yeah, it carries energy, doesn't it?
It indeed does.
That's something that we've had to learn as this time has gone on, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, speculation. We can't speculate how a tribal, parasitical psychopath with an alien mind implant can think. It's impossible. And one has to be very careful about speculating what they're going to do, what they're not going to do, because we just don't know.
Well, you handle that in your way, and this is one of the reasons why we want to have this talk. Because another point that I'm emphasizing among the three of us here is don't squabble with each other in the slightest way. You know, I do speculate a little, and I do look at certain things in the media that you don't look at. You also look at certain things in the media. But I only do that in a very measured way. And when Crooked Claw and I sit over in our corner and you're not there and we have a conversation about it, because we respect that you don't want to be involved, we measure very carefully our speculations.
But we had to get to a point of me stating that to you. For my own sanity, I was really struggling with you two talking about all the things that you look at when I'm not looking at it. It was too much for me.
Yes, unbroken agreements.
Agreements
are unspoken agreements are broken agreements. So we made a spoken agreement about that, and I can really feel it.
The harmony in the house
is better.
It
feels much better.
Yeah. So going back to Kerry, the flat earther, who went and sat on a park bench. and got arrested for it. Because Kerry is a believer in the flat earth, a lot of the comments were, oh, well, she's a flat earther. Well, that explains everything. Oh, these conspiracy theorists. So many comments about conspiracy theorists, which segues me very well into David Icke.
Before you mention David Icke, and you've been doing an intensive study, so we're all going to benefit now from your work, I want to say that what I found remarkable about that incident, Kerry on the bench, was the lightness and the humor that she maintained during that encounter, without laughing in their faces, without being antagonistically ridiculing them, which I would be tempted to do.
She was cordial as well. She
was cordial, and she treated it as if it was a joke in a way, although knowing that it wasn't, and I think that was brilliant, and I think that's a good guideline for everyone if you should have such an encounter.
Yeah, I thought she was super. So let's talk about David Icke then.
David Icke.
David Icke. So he did an interview on a YouTube channel called London Real. And it was about coronavirus and 5G. The BBC got involved. One reporter, apparently, who's not even anybody on the BBC, apparently wrote an article about why is YouTube allowing him to say this? It's completely falsified. There's no evidence, blah, 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 blah. So inevitably, YouTube and BBC colluded and the video got removed. Well, that gave it so much more welly than it would have had had it just been allowed to stay up, which makes me very suspicious.
Oh, they banned it, so it must be true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, the man who does London Real, Brian Rose, ex-Wall Street banker, ex-City of London banker, now does ayahuasca ceremonies with Dennis McKenna.
Who was the brother of Terence McKenna.
Yeah, so world-leading expert on entheogens.
Right.
And they go off to Costa Rica. It says that I travel all the way across the world to go to the Amazon to do ayahuasca ceremonies. You went to Costa Rica. That's not the Amazon, though. And in fact, I've been to Nicoya, where the retreats are that you go to, and it's just full of Americans on holiday. So,
by the way, I want to tell everyone that's a smoker's cough. Due to the fact that I'm hanging out to two people who live off coffee, alcohol, and fags. And purely for ceremonial purposes, I tend to join them when they roll me a hoe. Smoking is not my thing. I never smoked my entire life.
John Lash!
Well, it's the truth. I never did until I fell into a certain crowd. Anyway, that's my cough, in case you're wondering.
No, it's a cover. He's got coronavirus.
Well, she blew it now. The truth is out.
Okay, back to Costa Rica. So anyway, this person who does this London Real, who interviewed David Icke, he's interviewed many people. He's had, what's his name?
Sadhguru.
Sadhguru.
This
on the
clown
show.
On the internet, Sadhguru.
He's had many people. He's had David Icke on quite a few times. And so this man is promoting transcendental meditation, which we know is a CIA implant. And he's also now promoting Shipibo ayahuasca ceremonies, which of course is Christocentric. So if I was going to do ayahuasca, I wouldn't do it with the Shipibo.
No way. No way. So that's quite a big package. It tells us a lot about where David Icke is today. A couple of comments I would make. First of all, the timing of the coming out of this event, which was a very big deal and created a big sensation and a lot of chatter, is suspicious because the authorities continue to keep the pressure on. And we used to talk about a limited hangout, which is a way to let the pressure off. So generally, a limited hangout would occur in this way. Someone from the authorities or the three-letter agencies who was in the game of the perpetrators would come out as a pseudo-whistleblower or whatever, and then everyone would finally somebody's telling the truth, That was a limited hangout. And this is a version of the limited hangout. And it's a way to let some steam out of the pressure cooker.
Yeah, and you always have to bear in mind the best way to control the opposition is to be the opposition. And
he's up to his neck in Zanosh.
Ike's up to his neck. I mean, he's so confused, really. What are the stories? If the coronavirus isn't an actual entity,
which he suggests in the beginning,
totally thinks it's a psyop.
Ah, he says that in the beginning.
Saying in general, what is if the virus is not a real entity? The other two options are: it's 5G, it's covering up symptoms of 5G exposure, or it's a bioweapon from Wuhan.
Right.
They're allowing the bioweapon from Wuhan to stay on YouTube.
Because it demonizes China.
Exactly.
And that's part of the big game.
Exactly.
Which is all staged.
Yeah. So they've banned, in David Icke's talk with Brian Rose. Brian Rose said something really interesting that made me laugh. He said, I feel like Trump and Boris aren't part of this grand scheme.
In fact, during my ayahuasca vision, when the great serpent came, well, Donald Trump was riding on it. He was dressed in diapers, and he spoke to me in five languages.
And said he was Jesus. So Ike, in this, I mean, I've listened to about 4 hours of Ike talking over the last day and a half. That's what I have to do for Nimitor. The thing is, David Icke, his whole take on 5G and how dangerous it is, how poisonous it is, he relies on a book called Invisible Rainbow, which is written by a man called Furstenberg.
Mm.
I couldn't find out whether he was a Zenosh or not, but he was born in Brooklyn, so I'm going to guess he probably is. Now, that man relies on epidemiology to prove that things like the Spanish flu and any other kind of epidemic, pandemic, is a result of a military base releasing something.
A bioweapon.
Now, I've been researching epidemiology recently because of my German New Medicine investigations, and sorry to tell you, epidemiology is a Jewish invention.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know German New Medicine, of course, epidemiology falls by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, Ike's coming from that. 5G is another level of EMF radiation with no independent testing. And then, of course, he brings up the Jew in Senate who said, who has independently tested 5G? Well, isn't that great? We've got the Zenosh looking out for us.
Yes, really. I'm always comforted when
he's the only
like
one
that
that's questioned it.
Yeah.
Doesn't that just warm the cockles of your heart?
Well, it makes me... brings my rigpa around. This topic brings my rigpa around to the climate warming catastrophe. Mm. Interestingly, now you don't hear anything about that. Now we're not in danger of the Earth burning up in 10 years. Now it's fallen way into the background.
Well, they're saying now that there's because of less activity on the streets, there's less pollution, and therefore we've got, and that's actually going to reduce global warming.
And I just saw Tony Heller, and I would advise everyone to follow Tony Heller. He does excellent clips. He's extremely articulate, and they're short. Sometimes they're technical, but he handles the technicality beautifully. And he's been exposing climate fraud for 12 years now. So he came up with a vid yesterday that countered that. And he said, look, I have these records from Australia, which are showing that... the CO2 atmospherically is increasing, even though travel has been reduced to a minimum there. So he came in with a beautiful gesture of refutation on that point. But it reminds me of the climate, I don't even know what to call it. What is it? The global warming catastrophe, the global warming alarmism, because one of the huge misdirections there is, first of all, two points. One, it's based on a biophobic lie, which is that carbon dioxide, or just carbon, is a pollutant. Okay, carbon is not a pollutant.
Carbon footprint.
And airplanes do not emit from their engines carbon exhaust. They do not. Okay? So first of all, it's based on a huge lie. And the other thing about it is the alarmism is orchestrated and propagated in such a way that they never talk about the actual forms of pollution. Yeah. Mm. There are many, plastic bags, pollution from chemicals, from fertilizers. There's hundreds of forms of pollution that conscientious people would like to see cleaned up so that we respect our environment more. So, and 5G is one of them. Electromagnetic pollution is in that bag of pollutants. But I don't know that much about it, actually. I don't really know to what extent it can be verified and so forth and so on. But I'm not denying that the fact that we live bathed in these electromagnetic
fields,
archontic electromagnetic fields, including radio wave and, what do you call it, shortwave.
Microwave.
Yeah, I'm sure that being bathed in microwave radiations probably has nefarious effects. But I don't know what they are, and I don't know how far they go.
Well, Carolina Marklin from Learning German New Medicine, she said, yes, 5G is something to be concerned about, but if you stay in the fourth biological law, that all diseases start in the psyche, 5G can only have an effect on your energy levels. So it makes you really tired, really exhausted. I don't want to live next to a 5G tower.
No.
But I've never had a fucking smartphone. And I'm never going to have one. I've got what they call in the media now burner phones, like drug dealers use.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always going to have a burner phone that I never know where it is and I never know how to turn it on or off. I've never had a smartphone. I didn't want 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G. All these people that complain about 5G, fuck you.
Mm, that's true. They're supporting it by using these phones. And the dependency on these phones is, again, another form of pollution, a form of addiction. So those things are all real. But let's cut to the chase here. The conspiracy theorists running around the planet are saying that the 5G technology is at such a level of sophistication. And it's true that we know that the military have technologies that are far beyond anything that we can imagine, that they can in some way activate a signal from a 5G tower or, say, a set of 8 or 10 5G towers in a certain neighborhood and conceivably really put those people under attack to the degree that they would show rashes, headaches, coughing.
Where's the evidence for that?
Okay, I have not seen the evidence for it, but I'm not absolutely precluding that the evil, fiendish perps could have technology like that. So to continue on this vein, the subject came up of an individual who was what, a British engineer?
Whistleblower.
A whistleblower engineer who worked with
British military
developing microwave warfare, predominantly for igniting bombs on vessels in the water, and he was saying that microwave radiation is shortwave, so it attacks people who have larger body, have larger water content in the bodies, i.e. children, and that essentially it is a risk, it is a danger, and it has been developed for many, many years.
This weapon exists. Yeah. I remember picking up on that guy about 6 years ago, and I did find him sober. I found his style to be credible, and I found it to be convincing.
Yeah, I listened to him too, and I found him convincing the first time I listened to him, and then I went and re-listened, and something was off for me.
Well, the truth is we don't know, do we?
No, we don't know.
And getting back to David Icke, however, the reason why we're talking about this is because this is what David Icke has done by way of a masterstroke of misdirection.
Mm-hmm. Right, so I've got some quotes. Listening to him talk, it's like every sentence that comes out of his mouth is insane. I've got some quotes here. So they can do a mass cull with 5G.
Right.
Where's the evidence? It poisons the cells. The cells release exosomes as an immune response. No, immune system is just a theory that everyone has got on. It's not been proven. Astronomical communities across the planet are complaining they can't see the night sky due to all the low-flying 5G satellites beaming at the Earth.
Right.
That's bollocks.
Right.
They can take out oxygen with 5G. If they, apparently, if they crank it up to 60 hertz, then they can take out everyone's oxygen. They're installing it everywhere while we're all in lockdown, schools, hospitals, OAP homes, and it's the end of life as we know it.
Well, this is how I would break that down. In the first place, that's a really dangerous theory in this way. In a way, it gives credibility to the claim that people are suffering from an extraordinary contagious and malicious virus, because it implies, maybe without stating it, that what we're seeing as symptoms of the virus are already symptoms of 5G warfare. But the virus doesn't exist. Yeah. And so, in fact, that explanation merely adds more power to the lie.
Yeah.
And that's where I find it particularly evil and misleading.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the interviewer, Brian Rose, I listened to, it was about 2 minutes, 2 hours, 13 minutes, where Ike actually said something sensible. And that was, you know, the reason that people are complying is because of this illusion of power. It's all an illusion of power.
Which he may be adding to. And deliberately.
He's definitely adding to it. So he talks about it's the cult. The cult behind it, the cult. We're going to talk about who the cult is in a minute. And the interviewer, Brian Rose, says, so what's the solution, David? And David Icke said this. What you hate, you become. I am more powerful than the cult. Why, David? Asked Brian Rose. Because I have levels of consciousness. Everybody does. We can all be in a state of infinite awareness. End quote. That's his fucking solution to 5G. He's just spent two hours, 13 minutes scaring the bejesus out of everybody about this technology, and that's his fucking solution, excuse me.
Yeah, well, we've heard that before. He's been peddling that line. Raise your frequency and send out love.
Because he's rooted in the theosophical school, the Alice Bailey nonsense of new cage religion.
And unfortunately, that line, you become what you hate, which is a total lie, is entrenched in modern psychology from its origins. And even C.G. Jung, to a great extent, contributed to that with his theory of the shadow. So it means if you're standing there and there's someone in front of you and you don't like them or you see something negative in them, you're actually just seeing, you know, it's a projection. And that is not true on any account. And I can cite no example in my life or anyone's life I've ever known where they became what they hated. It's a ridiculous statement. And again, it plays on the guilt. It says the fault is with you.
Yeah.
It's like the bottom line.
Am I going to become a Jew then?
Yeah.
It's the bottom line of the Jewish persecution complex, as Kevin McDonald and others pointed out. Well, the Goyim hate the Jew. Oh, there's something terribly wrong with the Goyim. Mm. It's the same syndrome. Mm.
It's self-regulating, isn't it? It's political correctness, political policing of yourself.
And it gives you a bad conscience. Instead of trusting your instincts, what you love and what you hate, and you have to hate in order to protect what you love, that's the bottom line. Instead of doing that, it insinuates a bad conscience. You know, oh, I must not hate anyone. And at the same time, you're condemned as someone who hates, whether you like it or not. So it's a really big trap, and he's kettling people into that trap once again. And he's been doing it for decades.
30 years.
30 years, yeah?
Yeah. And, you know, he's quite convincing. I can see why people fall for his shtick.
Well, I have a point to make about that. And I was thinking about what you said earlier, how that when he's sort of in a sort of the the dialogue at the beginning, and then when he leans forward on his chair and he goes into that sort of London geezer talk, and that's just pure NLP. You know, he actually uses his hands to count the points, and then he actually comes forward, and the words are
projects
actually
his voice. Yeah,
exactly. Thrust, and that's NLP.
Yeah, and he's from the Midlands of Britain. They don't speak like London geezers in the Midlands of Britain.
Affectation he's assumed to say, well, I'm David Icke and I'm this mastermind mind and a great man saving humanity, but really I'm just a regular guy in a Cockney neighborhood.
Lower class.
I mean, when he was talking about everybody's infinite awareness, you know, so he goes like this, you know, Ethel working at the supermarket, she's infinite consciousness. But looking at, you know, it's like, oh, stop, you silly person, stop. So he keeps talking about the cult, who's responsible. Apparently he's put a meme up on the internet, and it's a picture of the earth, and the text says, ruled by psychopaths, run by idiots. Fair enough. So this brings us to another point we wanted to make in this, about the difference between the tribal Zenosh and the non-tribal Zenosh. So obviously the non-tribal Zenosh are the idiots. So they're your Trump, your Boris Johnson, da-da-da-da-da.
And they have skin in the game. They're not just neutral idiots. Yeah. Many of them have a lot of... Bill Gates is not tribal Zenosh, as far as I know.
He is, apparently.
I think he is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he is, apparently. Yeah.
Well, you could choose an example of someone who obviously isn't, but they have big stakes in the game.
Mm. And because he didn't talk about who the cult was in his coronavirus 5G talk, so I had to go and listen to another talk of his, which was about his book Triggered, 9/11, which, again, it was Brian Rose of London Real interviewing him. And I listened to all of that interview. And the way he explains it is he uses the analogy of a spider's web.
Gee, that sounds familiar.
I know.
Yeah.
Where have I heard that before?
I don't know, somewhere.
So at the very, very centre of the web, which you can't see because it's dark, is the spider. And that's the cult there. And then you come out to the next part of the web, and that's secret societies that don't even have names, so really difficult to expose them, he says. And then the next part of the web is the secret societies that you can expose, and he spent 30 years exposing them. And then the next part of the web is the governments, the three-letter alphabet agencies, the blah, blah, blah. So the cult, he claims, it's not the Jews. It's not the Jews.
I'm really relieved. Things are going to be different for me from here on out, I can tell you that.
It's the Sabbatean Frankists.
Yes, the Sabbatean Frankists.
Who were fucking Jews.
Yes. Not only that, not only are they Jews, but they are the most evil, nefarious, dangerous core of that ethnic group.
So you've studied Sabbatean Zebi.
Right.
So do you want to just give us a quick synopsis of where this came from, what it means?
Sure. It goes back to the useful instruction in our Gnostic intel, which equates a mythogen with a pathogen. So a mythogen can be a pathogen, and it can act like a pathogen. And actually a mythogen, if it's a true mythogen, has biological force, so that the bioethnos, or the tribe or nation that share that mythogen, come together like one entity, like one organism. So you have to recognize this is the reality of a mythogen. So we're talking about the singular case of an ethnic group, an ethnos, that has a mythogen that is an alien pathogenic agency. It's not a normal human tribalism. It's an alien pathogen. And just like biologists say, and I'll use that trope, that a pathogen or a virus, in quotes, mutates over time, all biological organisms mutate, actually. The pathogen will mutate. So there was a signal and singular and unique historical event that occurred in the year 1666.
666!
Right. And that was called the apostasy of Sabbatai Zvi. Z-E-V-I, Sabbatai Zvi. Sabbatai Zvi was an insane mystic, completely psychotic, schizophrenic, a madman, really. But he became the center, the figurehead of a certain cult. And at the time, he declared himself as the Jewish Messiah.
Because that was their part of the mythology.
Because they were waiting for it. Their mythogen, yeah. Up until 1666, their mythogen contained in it the expectation of their Messiah. They rejected the Christian Messiah.
Yeah, but they threw the Christian Messiah. They threw Jesus, the rabbi, at the Goyim to control the Goyim. Keep them occupied
to give
their
them
real
their,
Messiah came.
To give them their real false Messiah to the Goyim, while they still held to the belief that the true Jewish Messiah was coming.
And when that Messiah comes, they will rule the world.
Yeah. Through him, he would become king of the world, the Davidian king, and he would be crowned the king of Jerusalem, the Davidic king. Well, what happened was that, the story goes, and I get this from Jewish historians like Gershom Scholem, who is an expert on the Kabbalah, that millions of Jews around the world at that time, the word went around because it's a very tight-knit network and community, believed it. And of course, it turned out not to be true because nothing happened. The Jews, in fact, did not take over. He did not miraculously stand in front of the crowds and command anything.
Where was he from, out of interest?
He was from Turkey, I think. Yeah. Anyway.
Jewish kebab.
Thessalonica comes up a lot in Greece. Anyway, it was Greek or Turkish, I think. So anyway, what happened was that collapsed. And I describe it as a psychotic breakdown, a meltdown in the pathogen of the Zads and the Zenosh.
Because he had a lot of followers, didn't he? He had like millions.
He had millions, so they say.
So they say.
And so what happened then was that the pathogen of their mythogen rebooted itself, and it mutated into a form which is now identified as the Sabbatean Frankist Jews, Sabbatean Frankist movement. And basically what happened, it's easy for anyone to understand, we were just discussing it upstairs. Up until that event, the Jewish people as a whole, united by their mythogen, believed that they were the chosen people, God's chosen people on the earth. After that, they believed they were God himself. And that is what they believe now. That is the Sabbatean heresy.
So after Sabbatai?
Sabbatai Zevi.
After him came Jacob Frank?
Right. And another person called Nathan the Wise. And these were two Jews who were roaming around Palestine, Turkey, and Greece, who built the program and the agenda and the ideology of that movement, because Sabbatai Zvi himself didn't build anything.
He was a complete
gaga nutcase. Mm. Yeah.
Strange that they pick him.
Well, to reflect on that. So, to complete the story, one of the features, there are two primary features that come to mind right now of the Frankist Jewish cult. One is that instead of considering themselves to be God's chosen people, they regard themselves as God. Mm-hmm. Embodiment of God. As a people. Not any one of them, but the Jewish people, in quotes, are the embodiment of God. They are God on earth. And the second characteristic of it is that they adopted Crypsis. Now, they had practiced Crypsis before that, the famous story of the conversos here in Spain during the time of our great heroine, Isabella, Jews masquerading as Christians, or Jews...
Conversos. So they pretend
Moranos.
That they've converted to Christianity so that they can have influence and power in government, her court, etc.
And not die.
Yeah, and not die from the Inquisition.
So they had a practice of Crypsis. And this practice of Crypsis, which was inherent to their social behavior to protect their mythogen, mutated into an even more malicious form through this event. And one direct result of this, and David Icke is correct in the facts that he gives about this, You see, Sabbatai Zvi converted to Islam.
He had to.
Because he was captured. He went to Constantinople, and the rumor was going around that he was just going to walk in and take the place over like the Bolsheviks walked into the Winter Palace in St. Petersburg. And no, he sat down with the Sultan, and the Sultan said, look, if you don't, you're nobody. If you don't convert to Islam, I'm going to chop your head off. So he converted to Islam. But that set an example, and it established a new vein of their krypsis, or their self-concealment. And one result of that is the Saudi royal family. And David Icke correctly points that out.
I do have one question. If this is obviously going into the difficult to put oneself in the mindset of a psychopath with a psychopath with an alien mind implant. If they are God's, if they are God on Earth, God's voice, shall we say? Then why do they need to? Why do they need to control the media? Why do they need all the cloak and dagger stuff? What, you know, if they are all powerful as they believe they are, then why?
Because they have to create the illusion. Because they want to seize control of the nations, the goyim.
I comprehend that, but that's surely that's a big fault in their sanity, isn't
yeah.
it? Is that if you are all powerful, if you are an all powerful being, then surely that you don't need to. You just do something. You don't need to coerce. You don't need to enforce.
It all goes back to the Gnostic warning that Yaldabaoth chose a certain man from the tribe called Abraham, and he instructed him to be his agent among the nations.
Yeah.
And the quote actually says that, technically speaking, you could say that before that happened, they were not Jews. They were just another Arabic tribe, or what is the word that Lise uses?
COVID. No.
They were just Kohids and Kohens living with the Arabs, because they are Arabs. They're Jerubs, you know. But they became Jews. The quotation actually says, and he gave them the law, and he made them Jews. So what makes them Jews is the God concept that comes from the alien mindset, and the alien mindset is entirely predatory. Mm-hmm. So they are gods in his image, in the image of their creator, Yaldabaoth, Yahweh, Jehovah, and so they behave accordingly. You behave as you believe.
Mm-hmm.
So their God is not the divine mother, Sophia. Their God is not some Hindu god who dances naked like Shiva, or some Japanese kami who is a benevolent force of nature. Their god is the wrathful, punishing, genocidal god of the Old Testament, and that is the archontic deity.
Yeah.
So the archontic deity actually incarnates its mindset in this ethnic group.
Yeah.
So Jacob Frank came along and
Built the agenda.
So he joined forces with Amschel Rothschild and Adam
Weishaupt.
So they created the Illuminati, which of course where Ick, David Icke, always goes. It's the Illuminati.
Well, he's right in a sense. You know, he convinced a lot of people, and particularly in his earlier books, where he presents more, in my opinion, more convincing more convincing evidence for his argument that yes, the Rothschilds and the Illuminati were a direct outgrowth. They were like tentacles coming out of that monster.
Yeah, but it's dishonest because the Chabad Lubavitch created the Rothschild dynasty. It's the Chabad that are the center of the web that he talks about.
The Chabad Lubavitch are what Douglas Reed, in an excellent book called The Controversy of Zion, calls the Talmudic Directorate. And according to him, to give continuity to the story, the agenda and the ideology of the Sabbatean Frankist movement was feverishly and intensely developed in the ghettos of Poland and Russia. And it was the rabbis in those ghettos, including the Schneersons and the Shaktik butchers, the Zadik Shakters, the holy butchers who performed JRM, it was that group who cooked it. They cooked the pathogen. They cooked their own pathogen until finally it just burst out. And when it burst out of those ghettos, it had tremendous murderous force behind it, evidenced in the Russian, in the Soviet takeover of Russia, and evidenced in what is happening today. They would like to put the whole world in a Soviet-style
lockdown. I've listened to Ike the last 2 days keep talking about globalist fascism. And he had a throwaway comment that, fascism and communism, it's the same thing. So he believes that the Germans were financed by the Jews, the Sabbatean Frankists, to do what they did.
And so that Germany would be destroyed. They say, look, so Hitler destroyed Germany, and they set him up to do that, so he was an agent of their plan,
So they could implement Israel.
Not true. Well, I don't like to slander my good old friend Marquis de Sade, because we know that he plays into the narrative of Sophia's dreaming when she went lucid in her dream. Justine, which was a creature of Sade's imagination, is in a way how she woke up to the nightmare of history. But I would say that what they practice is sadism and not fascism. Yeah. Fascism, there is such a thing as benign fascism. You can believe it. And I would love to show David Icke some benign fascism. What it looks like. That's an enchilada.
I really struggle with how Ike, being the conspiracy analyst that he says he is, and he obviously is, he's done great work to a point, but because he's got this root of New Age religion, it sends people straight back to sleep again. That 5% of disinformation is enough to put people straight back to sleep again.
Absolutely, and not only that, but whatever happened to him after he wrote his first book, which was a frontal exposure of the evil of the Rothschilds and the banking system and everything. Who knows what happened to him, because now he is supported by Jewish bankers, those who handle his accounts, those who set up his conferences and his tours.
I've heard him talk this week, last couple of days. My friends in Israel have been writing and telling me about the draconian laws, the lockdown in Israel is what, because, the Sabbatean Frankists hate everybody. They hate the Jews more than anybody else. Well, we know that the Jews as a general tribal population are the cannon fodder for the Chabad Lubavitch.
They willingly sacrifice their people in the cause of their own pathogen. It's like a pathogen that is carried by the Jewish people. And I want to say something, by the way, about that. There's always this objection, and I have had the same objections. Believe me, I've been through them hundreds of times. Hitler had those objections. If you go to the YouTube and you find, probably on BitChute now, the 20-minute reading from Mein Kampf, where Hitler describes how he came to his view that the Jews were the enemy. The reservations that he had to do that were enormous, and the doubts and the questions in his own mind. So I faced that many times myself. And I'm sure that if I was in an interview with someone, they would ask me, well, John, you're profiling this core group of really evil, nefarious people within this larger tribal group, and you can't blame the larger tribal group for the actions of them. And in addition to that, you yourself know that the core group have sacrificed those tribal members for their own purposes. So how can you condemn all the Jews? And it's very easy. It's done in their name. It's done in the name of the Jewish people.
It's done in their image.
And it's done in their image. And every single Jew considers himself or herself to be different in a certain way. Well, if you want to be part of the human species, then I have to say, you have to let go of that. And as long as you hold that difference, and of course there are many Jews, you know, the guy who runs Nat's Deli in Studio City, where I used to go with a friend of mine, and have, you know, sit there and eat, sweet, funny, you know, I'm sure that he doesn't know any of this, probably, but he has in himself, because he, I am a Jew, it's in his name that this is being done. Now, I can bring the case back to myself, and just let me add one small note. Look at me, I'm an American, and look at what's done in my name. But I don't allow it to be done without coming out and saying something against it.
The problem is that people who identify themselves as Jews, they're always a nation living in a nation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Yeah, well, that's because of the way the pathogen works in the general population of the Jewish people. And then there is the core of that pathogen.
We've said it for ages, the Chabad, Lubavitch, they feed, they're the top feeders, they feed off everything that the other Jewish people have in their mythogen.
And they rely on the fact that Jewish people attach themselves, sentimentally or religiously to the identity of being a Jew. It's the Jewish identity that's the problem. I'm not saying I would attack Jewish people one-on-one as individuals, you know, as long as they adhere to that identity, they are part of the problem.
Yeah, and that identity, as you said, was given to them by the demiurge.
That's right. That's right. So that's the big picture as it looks today. Now, we're at 56 minutes, and I wonder if I might conclude with the insight that I had today, or is that a little too much?
Please do.
Okay. I've been thinking about the question. Okay, I'm calling the Gnostic Truth Core, which is the small point in the small loop, her ground force. We are Sophia's ground force. She is control and command. Although she is all around us, and we breathe her body, and with cells in her body, she is simultaneously in another dimension. She is an aeon. So she's like the control and command, which is not on the battle lines. The control and command in a war cannot be on the battle lines. We are on the battle lines. So we are her ground force. And in the first place, just holding our stance as her witnesses, living in the narrative, following the simple practices, bonding with each other, is how we hold our place for her. Because in some respect, which remains to be learned every day, what she does is going to rely on looking into her ground force. She looks into us. Where you put your attention, where you put your rigpa, she looks as well. So that is the vital connection. So that's my picture. I'm confident about that. But I've been saying a couple of times already, I'm not exactly sure what we can do to facilitate or enable her to make the decisive moves for her correction. But I had an observation, I had an insight today about Mephisto rules. I was thinking, you know, it seems like this coronavirus scam is so obviously a hoax. It seems so obviously and transparently to be phony. Because it's very easy to ask a few common sense questions and say it doesn't stand up. Like, obviously, the precautions taken against it are likely to be far more murderous and disastrous than the virus itself and so forth and so on. So, well, why is it that way? Why does it look like it would be so easy to topple the hoax? And I thought, well, gee, if the hoax could be toppled before the world at large, then the whole game for them would be over. But I don't think so. And I'll tell you why, because I had this insight today. It goes like this. Mephisto uses a hoax to launch a psyop. And the psyop is designed in such a way that even the exposure of the hoax would lead to its ultimate success. Now that's a cautionary little piece of thought from the mind of yours truthfully. In other words, I'm being very careful not to think that merely by exposing this as a hoax, it's game over and correction on.
No, I think they would have looked at every permutation of this hoax, and again, to control the opposition, we have to be the opposition. So they would have looked at every parameter. But they haven't looked at the Sophianic parameter.
Because they can't see it. You know, in that famous passage where Sophia declares that the magical child will smash you.
Pound you into clay.
Pound you into clay, and it will be as if you had never been. She addresses the demiurge as Saklas, which means blind one. And so they are blind, and they cannot see us. They cannot. It's like a blind spot in their field. There's nothing there. You see? So that's the point of power from which we operate. But I'm advising everyone who's listening to be really careful about this, because I'm pretty sure that they have gamed this whole thing in war game simulations. They have covered every possible objection, every possible form of dissidence, non-compliance. They've gamed it out to the infinite degree. And so now I'm beginning to see that it's quite probable that they would rely on the exposure of the hoax to in some way further the PSYOP. That's Mephisto rules. That's really the deceit of Mephisto would go to that extent. And in that respect, you can expect everything. It's not over. This is not the worst of what they can do. They have other weapons, they have other methods, and I am pretty sure that they are intent on using everything they have, because they see the crown. They see the crown of David floating in the sky. And it's going to come down in Jerusalem, and they're going to rule the world.
This is the consummation of their works, isn't it? It was the 5 points that Henry Ford talked about in the International Jew.
It's a five-pointed crown.
Yeah.
And so be vigilant and expect anything and brace yourself.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
And earth yourself.
And earth yourself.
Get your feet in the ground. Get your feet in
beauty.
The earth.
Stay in beauty.
And you know, stay in beauty, because beauty is our weapon.
And it's okay to crack.
Yes. It's okay to crack. It's okay to cry. It's good to cry. But don't squabble with each other. Let's not have on the forums of Nemeta or among yourselves the slightest degree of squabbling. We can all have our differences, but bonding in her power is what turns the tide.